what is your musical background?
I studied classical piano when I was a kid. Then I got into rock bass when I was a teenager. Then I got into electronic music in college, which kind of led me back to classical. And from there, I got into composing and eventually got a job at LucasArts as a composer.
Cool. So what inspired you to write game music?
You know, oddly enough, I found my job at LucasArts through a newspaper ad. I don't think that happens anymore.
All right. Well, like you said, you found your job through a newspaper ad. Was that the only way you came to LucasArts?
It was actually a pretty great fit overall, because I had been doing composition and a lot of technical and electronic and computer stuff, mm-hmm. and I hadn't yet had a chance to put the two together. And so, while I got the job randomly, it actually sort of seemed to fit in terms of my larger trajectory in a really good way.
Okay, so what's the first thing you do when you begin to write a game score?
The first thing you do is you talk to the project leader and get a sense for what their sort of understanding of the game is on an emotional level, on a subliminal level, kind of what the moods are that they're after, what the story is, what the settings are, who the characters are. You know, the basics that you might do in a film, except you also do one additional thing, which is you ask, how do all the rooms connect up to each other? Because that's important, too.
So how did you become involved with the game, The Dig?
Boy, I think I became involved with it the day I started at LucasArts in 1990, because at that point it had been in production for about a year already. That game was in production for so long. So you don't, with something like that, you don't ever become involved with it. You just are.
Yeah, there were three different versions, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
At one point. Which were you scoring for one and then you had to change to the other, or how did that work?
I think by the second to last version was when I actually started scoring, and I think that was Brian Moriarty's version. And then, when Sean took over, it became the real thing.
Mm-hmm. So how closely did you work with Sean Clark? Did he say to you, just go and compose, or how did that work with him?
It was great. I got a lot of sort of emotional and sort of kind of guidance from him in terms of the moods and stuff. But he more or less let me just craft the pieces the way I went about doing it. So he didn't give me a lot of detailed feedback, but he gave me a lot of good guidance.
So now the Dig, the music for The Dig actually is rooted in a very an ambient style. Why was that approach taken?
Huh. Well, certainly being an adventure games kind of move kind of slowly. So the stock in trade when you're scoring an adventure game is how do you make music that kind of stays out of the way but also kind of carries you along?
Mm-hmm.
And so, ambience is a big part of that. And then you try to pepper it up with little things that happen when certain events happen.
The technical side of this is a system called iMuse.
That's right.
Do you have to be a programmer to program music for games?
No, although there has to be a programmer somewhere in the chain.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of companies, what they do is they have somebody called an audio integrator who actually is the interface between the composer and the playback technology. At LucasArts, we sort of did all of that under our hats, which is, Peter McCall and I were the main designers of the iMuse system. We were also two of the three composers there.
Mm-hmm.
So, we kind of did both, and that was great because we, were able to really craft the technology according to the needs of the composer as opposed to the needs of the game programmer, which, gave us a lot of flexibility in terms of being able to make the music responsive but still seem kind of organic.
Okay, now the music for The Dig creates a mood. When creating the music for The Dig, what were the factors that went into creating that mood?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I've always had a real affinity and interest in chord progressions and modulations.
Mm-hmm.
So in the way that a lot of film scores might have a leitmotif, where there's, a certain melodic riff or theme that applies to certain characters or certain situations or whatever, in The Dig, a lot of that was done through, leitmotif chord progressions, where there'd be a particular two or three chord progression that would signify a certain emotion, and then those would kind of get woven in and become sort of the foundation for longer pieces and longer ambiences.
Mm-hmm. Now, you did utilize some of Wagner's work.
That's right, yeah.
How did that come about, and was it just sort of part and parcel with what you were doing?
Yeah, it fit in real organically. We realized that the score could really benefit from having some live sound in it. And I thought of a trick that I had done in my electronic years at college, where you take little pieces of orchestral music, like little a measure or two of a given chord, and then actually, you know, cut them together as if they were samples, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did is, it was pretty exhaustive. We got the rights to a couple of CDs worth of Wagner orchestral music, and I went through all of that and chopped it up into, oh, I'd say about 300 little samples of 2 or 3 seconds each, maybe 4 to 5 seconds in some cases.
Wow.
And then I went and modulated those into a bunch of, transposed them through pitch transposers into a bunch of different keys. So basically, I had a situation where whatever chord the piece I was working on had at any given moment, I had several choices of Wagner samples, if I wanted to kind of lay underneath to just kind of fill it out. So I had done a lot of the composing using the Kurzweil K2000, especially a big patch called Batman Strings, which I loved.
Oh, yeah.
And so I layered these Wagner samples underneath that patch, and they blended really nicely, and it just filled it in.
Doing that, you mentioned on the CD that one of the special challenges in transferring this from the game to a CD was interactivity.
Yeah, exactly. They're very, very different in terms of what you do with the musical energy. In the case of a game, especially an adventure game, typically when you arrive in a new place or when something happens, the music does something big and then kind of settles down and eventually kind of dribbles off.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in, you know, CD music or concert music, generally it's the exact opposite. You know, the music starts kind of at a sort of low energy level and then sort of builds to a big climax. So essentially what I had to do for the CD is I had to kind of flip all of the energy flows of the pieces around so that they, you know, could build and have a natural climax rather than having the climax at the beginning and then trail off.
Right.
Which wouldn't make much sense to somebody who is just listening to a CD, although it makes a lot of sense to somebody who's playing a game.
Exactly. Now, the transfer to CD, you had to do a bit of extra composing. What was what more did you have to put into the composing that you didn't already? Was it that point that you were talking about? Making it so that it could, in fact, be a little bit more listenable, I guess is maybe the word I'm looking for?
Yeah, exactly. What I did is I took all of the sort of, I guess you could say, the interesting bits from about 2 hours worth of the game score. And I just kind of started working with them and massaging with them and seeing what fit next to what. Because ultimately when you're doing a CD, I thought of the CD really as a single 40-minute piece, even though there's like 9 tracks in it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I thought of it as something that ultimately told a story. And I wanted that the story that the music told on the CD to more or less parallel the story that the game told, but it, of course, did it in a very compressed form. So it was really kind of re-architecting how the flow went, really on a second-by-second basis, but using all the material from the game.
Mm-hmm. Now, I realize that the process of scoring a game is different than that of a movie. Could you explain how a game is scored? Where do you get your inspiration from? Are you given a demo, or you just work from pictures, or something like that?
Well, it's, you know, certainly the game usually is coming together as you're scoring it, so you can't really play it from beginning to end in most cases. So what you do is you get it piecemeal. You look over the programmer's shoulders, you get the cutscenes, you spend a lot of time talking to the project leader, at least in our case at LucasArts we did, because the project leaders always had a really clear vision in their head, and if you could extract it out of their head, you know, that covered a lot of ground in terms of filling in the cracks of what was actually on the screen at any given moment, because ultimately, the games never came together until the last month or two, and you start scoring them, you know, 8-10 months in advance, and so you really have to kind of form your own picture at the beginning, and then As the game fills in, you kind of have to adjust your picture to match the reality of the game that's coming online.
Okay, so there is something like a spotting session, essentially.
Lots of them, yeah. A lot of times you're playing through empty rooms, for example, and just getting a sense for how the spaces flow one to another. You know, a lot of times you're seeing a lot of, you know, crazy bugs on screen and just have to ignore them. And in general, you just get as much information as you can, but it's very piecemeal and very spotty, and so you really have to just kind of accept that and work with a lot of unknowns and take your best guess as to where things are going.